Chapter 9, What It All Comes Down To. The reason we do more, push a little harder, move a bit faster, and run around like a crazy person all comes down to this in the end. We want love. We try to get love in a million ways. For me, it's been performance and achievement. For you, maybe it's the same. Or maybe it's sex, food, excessive exercise, distracting consumption of media, shopping, attempts to please your parents. Even something that looks completely selfless, like serving others, can be a way to get someone to love you back. But our good grades can't love us back. Our moisturized skin can't love us back. Our food rules can't love us back. Our achievements can't love us back. Our perfectly good works can't love us back. Our hurry up approach to life can't love us back. We know there's nothing we can do to lose God's love, right? Well, there's nothing we can do to earn it either. For it is by grace you have been saved through faith. And this is not from yourselves. It is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. So why do we make it more than that? We've heard the sermons, taken the Bible studies, underlined the verses, and still we try to make everything far more complicated than it should be. I mean, here is this incredible gift that God holds out to us, yet we insist on settling for second-rate substitutes like approval or a bit of fame. It starts when we are young. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with being liked, which shaped my earliest ambitions. My worldview was quite small, so I thought being liked mostly had to do with how good you were on the basketball court or if the boys thought you were cute. My obsession with my hair and resulting overuse of Aquanet hairspray are now to blame for a huge hole in the ozone layer. Most days, I felt like I was on the outside looking in. So many of my memories are of being left out or relentlessly teased. Moments in high school lunchrooms have a weird way of scarring you. As an adult, I tend to be an avoider. It's a carryover technique I learned early on. Withdraw when you are struggling. People may sense there's something wrong, but I am reluctant to share how I feel deep down. Beginning in my childhood, withdrawing was a technique I used to insulate myself from pain. There was a lot of shame that came with being a teased kid who was easily prone to tears and criticized for being too sensitive. I remember thinking that was the way it would always be. I'd never be good enough, never be truly accepted, never be on the inside, so I had to figure out how to cope. This will probably come as a shock to my high school classmates because I had carefully curated my image, and most of them probably thought I had my life together. But I was a hot mess just waiting for the school bell to ring. When I was alone, I experienced moments of quiet desperation. I never had a plan to take my own life, but to speak candidly, I had moments of suicidal ideation, wondering if I'd be missed or if the kids would feel sad when I was gone. I realize how dramatic that sounds, but I was just a kid. I didn't have a way to process or deal with what I was feeling. This was actual trauma, and I never really worked through it, even in my 20s or 30s. I just covered my pain with busyness. My coping mechanism as I grew older was to perform in order to gain acceptance at work, at church, with my parents, with my in-laws, with peer groups I tried to gain access to. My complicated teenage trauma hangs on like a parasite, even in midlife. Someone can make me feel forgotten or stupid, and my gut-level response is to run to my bedroom and cry. A while back, I applied for a ministry opportunity, and it seemed like it was a go. But then the call came. We don't think you're the right fit for us. It didn't matter that the woman on the other end of the line was completely professional. Suddenly, the only thing that mattered was that I wasn't the right fit. Her remarks loosed in me a fury of repressed insecurity. All I could hear were words the woman didn't actually say. You're not good enough. We picked someone better, and it's not you. Don't miss the irony of this. I spend countless hours encouraging other women to rest in God's love. Yet that day, I found myself alone in the kitchen, practically powerless under the tyranny of one sentence: "We don't think you're the right fit for us." In a flash, the lie I believed is that I need people's approval to matter. When that happens, I get antsy and stressed out, thinking that if I work harder tomorrow, I'll get what I missed today. Next time, with enough effort, I'll be the one picked. What does all of this have to do with a growing slow mindset? One of the reasons we are in a hurry is because we want to know our life is mattering, and we're racing against time to make sure it will. In the rush, we substitute God's love with false imitations, accomplishment, a boyfriend, or a new Vera Bradley bag. We look for ways for the world to love us back, and the world will fall short every time. I can't stop thinking about what would have happened if Jesus had operated that way. Jesus was pressed on every side and was often ridiculed or questioned. But Jesus didn't rush around trying to perform. Quite often, he told his friends to keep quiet about his miracles, and he frequently withdrew to lonely places and prayed. He surrounded himself with the love and direction of the Father, often in obscurity. Those moments with the Father centered him, placing him right in the middle of God's will. What if the real reason we are in a hurry is because we've forgotten that we don't have to run in circles chasing love? Let's slow down. Let's have compassion for ourselves and ask God to heal our wounds instead of trying to put band-aids over bullet holes. Let's accept where we are, resisting the urge to race forward in search of the mattering, because the mattering is right here. Deep down, I think we are all a bunch of scared little kids. We are all dealing with some trauma from our past. We've all been hurt, and most of us probably haven't really dealt with the pain. We have moments when we are 16 years old on the inside, wanting to run to our bedrooms and cry it out, but we never do it. There's the pressure to keep pressing on, making the dinners, meeting the deadlines, putting one foot in front of the other. There's no time to cry or process. We have to intentionally build time into our lives so we can see that God is loving us right here. What if we were that intentional? What if, in a season of crisis or disappointment, we could all just go back to our bedrooms, flop onto our beds, and pound our fists into the mattress? What if we laid it all out before God? Our pain, our failures, our neurotic attempts to control and fix, our past hurts. This is where we will find God's love like a surprise, by entering into the places where it hurts the most, instead of medicating with self-help, wine, Netflix, or Amazon Prime. God makes it really clear. He is going to show up for us in our pain. Listen to these verses from the Bible. He will not leave you or forsake you. I am with you always, to the end of the age. For I am sure that neither death nor life, nor angels nor rulers, nor things present nor things to come, nor powers nor height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord. I could go on. He is not going to leave you alone at the homecoming dance, the school lunchroom, or wherever your wounds of unworthiness were first inflicted. I'm not going to try to make the truth more complicated than it is. The Sunday school answer is the right answer. The answer is Jesus. For every hurt you're feeling, for every moment you feel obscure, for every second you felt overlooked, for every time you have felt like the fields you're planting are weedy and unproductive, here stands Jesus with his arms open wide. That's the only thing that is going to break this insanity of us feeding our need for love with sorry substitutes. We need to make ourselves 16 again. Or 5, or 12, or 23, or 38, or whenever it was that we stopped believing God's love was enough for us. And then we need to look around to see where God was, even then. I wish I could go back to 16-year-old Jennifer and tell her to look around to see that Jesus was in the room with her when no one else saw her. He was there, sitting cross-legged at the end of her bed. Often, when old insecurities rise up, I do battle with that awkward, insecure girl. In my shame, I don't know what to do with her besides scold her or ignore her. Maybe what I really need to do is send her into the arms of Jesus, who says, "Come here, girl. It's okay. I love you." Could you do the same today? Could you let Jesus meet the child in you? Could you let God reparent you? Whenever you find yourself striving for love, could you look up and ask the Lord to hold you? When we hurt, we need a way for God to step in and be the dad who swoops up his little girl and reminds her that she is loved, loved, loved. I've done a lot of dumb things for love. I've used up a lot of hairspray, dated too many of the wrong boys, racked up a lot of airline miles, said yes to 100 committees, all in the name of love. The smartest thing I ever did was open myself up to the love of Jesus. That's it. If there is any good thing in me, it's the love of Jesus. Do you need a love like that? You don't have to wait. You don't need to get to a certain age to get this whole thing figured out. That dawned on me recently during a potluck dinner with friends. I'm a little embarrassed to tell you that my contribution had 2 cans of creamed soup in it. But then again, you'd need to try my mom's chicken on Sunday before you judged it. After dinner, we pushed aside the plates and settled in for conversation. A friend tossed out a question asking how he could rest his mind and set aside the cares of his work when he had so much responsibility to see it succeed. Most of us at the table were in our 40s, and because he was still in his 20s, we all gave him the easy answer. We kept telling him that it would get easier in time as he aged. We all knew from experience what it was like to lose sleep on account of our ambition to grow beautiful and good things in the fields we'd been assigned. In time, he'd learn the art of growing slow. True enough, as I've gotten older, my preference for a slower-paced living has strengthened. It's become easier for me to resist the temptation of bigger and faster. Perhaps it's because I have also experienced some success in my life, and I know what it cost me. I don't want to say I regret what I've accomplished, but I know I paid a price. After I got home from dinner that night, I couldn't help but feel regret over our advice. We should have never left him with the impression that he had to wait, that his feeling would work itself out in time, because you shouldn't have to wait. You shouldn't have to wait until you reach some magical age to settle the issue of worth and love and significance. Some things really aren't worth waiting for. The next day, I called our friend. I felt like he needed a big sister. I told him that despite the gender difference, I was a lot like him. Driven, ambitious, high capacity. And then I told him what I had been learning on my own growing slow journey. Ultimately, for me, this was a question of identity and love. I told him about the questions I had been asking myself. Who am I? What defines me? What gives me worth? Where do I find love and acceptance? In the end, it's not my accomplishments or books. It's not even my family that gives me worth. It's Jesus alone. The whole point is Jesus and his willingness to give up his status in heaven to become one of us down here on earth. Because of that, we have been invited into a relationship with him. The Pharisees were all about trying to prove themselves to God. My friend and I would have been great Pharisees, meeting benchmarks, proving our worth. But God did away with all that proving. The whole narrative of the Bible hinges on people being unable to keep all the rules. So he made a way for us that invites us to come as we are, broken, weak, 16 years old, crying, raging, unsteady, indecisive, prone to doubt. We wail, and he takes us back again. Someday, I could lose my ability to write or communicate or deliver or achieve. I want to be okay if that happens. I want to know that I am not defined by results. I am defined by a singular relationship. That's it. I'm going to keep working hard. I'm going to keep planting seeds and watching things grow. And I will remember that there are some things worth waiting for. Periods when we will have to wait for God to move, crops to grow, some prayer to be answered. But we don't have to wait to find love. It's right here, right now. Jesus is waiting. He is love. And love has been right here all the time.